The Eighth Commandment is one of the shortest, just four words, you shall not steal. And we think we know what that means, but as you begin to get a glimpse of from the Heidelberg Catechism responses, there's a lot more going on here than meets the eye. Now, if we look at the Westminster Shorter Catechism, when the Reformed Church has had another century to meditate on this commandment, listen to what it says. What is required in the Eighth Commandment? The lawful procuring and furthering the wealth and outward estate of ourselves and others. What is forbidden in the Eighth Commandment? Whatsoever unjustly hinders our own or our neighbor's wealth or outward estate. Now again, there's a lot more going on here than we would at first think. We have to remember when we come to any of the Ten Commandments what Jesus taught us, which is that all the law and the prophets hang on two great commandments, not negative commandments, not commandments forbidding anything, but commandments that are commanding something that's affirmative and something that is personal and relational. And this sets the law of Moses, as it is often called. It sets God's law apart from all of the different ancient law codes like the law of Hammurabi and so forth, secular scholars like to kind of throw the Old Testament law in with, as, you know, they're all basically the same. This is what evolved in society was coming up at the time. What is absolutely unique about God's law is the fact that it all rests on two affirmative commands, which are love commands, which means that they're relational commands, which means that they are personal commands. There's no other law code like that. And so we have to keep that in mind when we come to any part of the law, indeed any part of the Old Testament. Jesus says that all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now, when a Hebrew said the law and the prophets, that was basically a way of saying the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures. So we know when we come to any verse, no matter how obscure, that it has something to do with loving God with all of our heart and soul and strength and loving our neighbor as ourselves. All of life flows from that. Everything in the scriptures has something to do with that. What we were created for, how we lost it, how we fell away from it, how everything begins to break down when we get away from it, how it is impossible for us to really love our neighbor unless we first love the God who gives all life and who's sovereign over all life with all of our heart, all of our minds, and all of our strength. And if we can't love our neighbor as ourselves, everything relational in life, which means everything in life, begins to break down. Marriages begin to break down. Families begin to break down. Businesses begin to break down. Communities and so forth all begin to break down. Everything that God commands us, these two great love commands, they're for reflections of the fact that God created us to be his children. In other words, he created us to be his images, to imitate him, his imitators, his reflectors. That's what we're created to be. That's what sons and daughters are. And so this commandment, you shall not steal, is telling us things that those who love God with everything they are and who love their neighbor as themselves never do. We are to be imitators of God as dear children, Paul says in Ephesians 5:1. And what we see with God, who has all wealth, because everything belongs to him. Everything depends upon him. Paul in Acts chapter 20 and verse 35, when he's trying to encourage the Christians to be a giving people, he said, remember the words of the Lord Jesus who said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And when we hear that, we go, what a nice little thought that is. And you put that on a plaque or send it in a card. But none of us would actually really believe that. It's a nice thought. It's one of those twists. But who really believes that? That it is more blessed to give than to receive? I mean, when you really think about it, if we just come at life apart from God, how could that possibly be true? It is only true because the living God is this way. This is not a nice maxim used to control people. This is the life of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit from all eternity. It is more blessed to give than to receive. And so we see the triune God who needs nothing creating everything. We see that by our own values, whereby leisure, being unencumbered, no demands on us, that's the ultimate goal of our modern society. God is much the opposite. He creates trillions of things. All of them are completely dependent upon him. He heaps obligations and responsibilities and relationships upon himself in every direction when he doesn't have to do that. And then he says, very good, very good. We say, not good. In conferences, obligations, God says, very good. And we're supposed to be like God. So it is more blessed to give than to receive. We also see this kind of theology in Paul's command in Ephesians 4, verse 28. Let him who stole steal no longer. But what's the affirmative side of that? What are you supposed to be doing? Just not stealing? If you try to live that way, you will be stealing. I'll explain in a minute. He says, rather, let him labor, let him work. Let him work with his hands what is good. Why? That he might have something to give him who has need. That he might have something to give. That he might have something to share. Of course, he gets to enjoy the fruit of his labor himself, but that he might be able to partake of the blessedness of giving. And so we see life in God is a matter of giving, and then other people giving back to you. And then we give to them, and then they give back to us, and then we give to them, and they give back to us. It's a circle, it's a collage of giving and receiving with blessing. Because the only person who can ultimately just give without first receiving, is God himself. He's the only one who can start out by giving. All the rest of our giving is because he first gave to us. He showed us that principle first in creation, and then he secondly showed us that principle supremely in redemption through Christ. Christ gave himself. He gave himself. He first gave. We know love, says John, because God first loved us. Now, what happens when you have giving? Not selfish giving, because you can give in such a way that is sinful and selfish. If you give to somebody so that you can obligate them to yourself, so that you can put them in debt to you, you know, then that's sin. You're not giving the way God gives. You're giving the way sinners give. In mafia circles, the father of the family, the head mafioso, John Gotti, that kind of person, they're known as ring givers. That's because they're always giving gifts. They're spreading gifts around, nicest people you'll ever meet. All those gifts have strings. All those gifts indebt you. If you've ever seen the old movie, The Godfather, somebody asks him for a favor, needs a favor one time, and wants to know how he can pay him back, and the Godfather's insulted that you would try to pay him back. I give to you freely, but one day, I'll need you to do something for me. God doesn't give that way. When you have giving that coming out of faith from God, there is a blessing both to the giver and to the recipient. Let's say you have somebody who is in need. Let's say you have somebody who is on hard times. They need something. They need their light bill paid. They need some food. They need some help. And then you give, because God is first given to you, and it's more blessed to give than to receive. What happens in the heart of both people is an infusion of gratitude and humility. The two things that are foundational to the Christian life, two things that are foundational to joy, gratitude and humility. The person, the brother or sister who is in need, is already humbled. They have a need. They can't fill it. And obviously, they're going to feel gratitude to the person who gives to them in their time of need. Gives freely. It's not a loan. It's freely given. No strings attached. But what about the giver? They also have humility and gratitude instilled in them. First of all, they know as they look upon their brother or sister who's in time of need that the only thing that makes a difference, the only thing that makes them able to fill this need, to have the wealth to fill the need, is because God has given to them. There's no cause for pride. There's no cause for superiority. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians, what do you have that you have not received? So God is first given to you so that you can give to this brother or sister. So you feel humility as well. And you also feel gratitude that God has given you this ability to do this. And so you have gratitude and you have humility in both giver and recipient when it's done out of faith and out of love. That's something that you do not have when you remove the personalness and when you remove from God from the picture. Let's take the modern welfare system, the modern entitlement system. You have all kinds of wealth being given and received, but it's given under entitlement. The recipient has no humility or gratitude because this is their right. They're entitled to this. In fact, somebody has probably wronged them in terms of modern social justice that they had the need to start with. It couldn't possibly be their own fault. And the giver, there's nothing personal there in the whole transaction. It's the amorphous, faceless, nameless government giving this. And so the blessings are completely absent. James says in James 1, don't be deceived. Every good gift, every perfect gift is coming from the Father of lights. That is the nature of wealth. And that is the lesson that God wanted to teach his people as he was bringing them into the promised land. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, he says, beware. Here's going to be your great temptation because I'm going to bless you. I'm going to treat you as children, not as little children. I'm going to treat you more maturely now. In the desert, God provided for them hand to hand every single day. Every single day there was manna from heaven. Every single day there's a miracle being worked so they can eat. Time and again, God brings water from rocks so that they can drink. So God is hovering over them like a little child and doing these miracles in their midst every single day. Why is he doing that? He wants them to understand, number one, he loves them. Number two, he's never going to abandon them. And number three, every good gift, every good thing comes from God. It comes from the hand of God. And so he's showing them that every day. He's handing them the bread. He's handing them the water. He's making it so their clothes don't wear out and so their feet don't swell up, even though they're doing so much walking. But God says as they go into the promised land, you know, we're told that as soon as they went into the promised land, the manna ceased. No more manna, no more daily obvious miracle of God personally handing people bread and water. No more. He says, now I'm going to give you the ability to earn wealth. Now I'm going to bless you in your own labor. Through that means I'm going to work the miracle of giving you bread and giving you water and giving you vineyards and fields and houses. I'm going to bless you in that way. But I'm still giving this to you, just like I was handing you manna in the desert. That's the lesson. Do you get it? Do you understand? And this is how I want you to take dominion and to glorify the whole earth. I'm going to glorify you. I'm going to bless you. You're going to bless one another, and then you're going to glorify and bring to fruition and beauty the entire earth. This is how I do it. This is how God makes us grow up. And so when God stops working these obvious miracles like manna, that's not a step back. That's a step forward. God says, time to grow up. I'm going to bless you. I'm making you grow up as sons and daughters. I'm making you be like me. But Moses says, here's the main temptation you're going to face. You're going to want to forget God because he's not handing it to you directly with an obvious miracle every day. And he says, when you've eaten and you're full and you've built beautiful houses, everything you have is multiplied. Why? So you can be like me. Why? So you can understand it's more blessed to give than to receive. Why? So you can bless one another and glorify the earth. But he says, when that happens, your temptation is going to be to forget. He says, don't forget. I'm the one who gave you water from the rock. I'm the one who gave you manna from heaven. The same lesson still applies. You're going to be tempted to forget and to say, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. It is that lack of faith, it is that self-idolatry that is at the root of all theft. All takings, all failings to give gratitude, all inhumility when it comes to things. God ordained one specific way that we're supposed to visibly acknowledge that we get it, that we're not a little child anymore. We're growing up. We're becoming like God. We understand everything is his gift, It doesn't matter if he's blessing our work and that's how he's doing it. It's still his gift. And we understand the purposes. God says, you show that you get all this by tithing to me, by taking off the top and giving to me. That's the way you show that it all comes from me, and you know that. You get it. You're doing all of this out of humility and gratitude and joy. I remember when I was still in school. Janet and I had just gotten married. We're living in student housing. She's working as a secretary. I'm working part-time, law clerking, and we have very little. I mean, we had an old window unit air conditioner. This is Tallahassee, Florida. And then it broke because the thing's about 30 years old. So we have no air conditioning in Tallahassee, Florida, and it's about the hottest place on earth with the humidity. And so we had a very wise pastor who came to see us at our church, and he was talking to us, how you doing, how's everything going, are you making ends meet, how are finances, how are you doing? And we kind of told him everything, and he got very thoughtful, thinking about it, thinking about how we're trying to make ends meet, and he said, you'll make it if you tithe. Now that's counterintuitive. It's like, we don't have any money. It's stretched so thin, you know, so it's like we need to save every penny. He said, no, that's not the way life is. You give to God. You acknowledge that he's the one behind everything and every good gift comes from him. You're going to make it. He's going to bless you.